This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me to talk about obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, and current available treatment options are Clinical Director of Outpatient Services and Staff Psychologist at Linder Center of Hope and OCD CBT Psychotherapist Professor at the University of Cincinnati's Department of Psychiatry, Dr. Charles Brady. Linder Center of Hope Staff Psychologist Dr. Nicole Bossi and Social Worker at Linder Center of Hope Jennifer Wells. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Charles, start off by telling us exactly what is obsessive-compulsive disorder?
Oh, surely. I'd be glad to talk to you about that. What obsessive-compulsive disorder is, it's a very serious illness. It basically, we define it by the person's experience of having thoughts or urges that come into their mind that cause them a huge amount of distress and terror. Now, these are thoughts and feelings that they don't want, things that do not match their personality, do not match their desires. And when they create a large amount of distress, our brains do not like distress. And so the person responds by doing some countermeasures. These we call compulsions. The classic ones that you may see on TV are washing the hands or checking the stoves or locks. But they can also include things that people do inside their mind. A person may have a fear that maybe they said something humiliating to someone at a party the other night. And so
whether they actually did or not.
Right.
Okay.
They start to doubt, you know, did I or didn't I? And so what they might do is they might do something we call mental review, where they start replaying that party over and over in their mind, trying to gain some certainty as to whether they said a humiliating thing or not. And so these patterns, as they start out, they usually start out small, but then they start to progress to where it can become a very severe and debilitating illness that can really kind of crush a person's life and wreak havoc.
Mm. Nicole, how serious can this become?
It can become pretty intense. Mostly I work on the residential units, so typically I see the cases that are pretty severe. They're very debilitating. Often the patients aren't going to work or school. They're not... Sometimes, you know, in some cases, they might not even be able to leave the house.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, do you know happen to know how many people are affected by OCD in the U.S.?
You know, that
I've seen one in 100 is what I've seen.
And probably one in 40 is probably closer.
That many.
It's pretty prevalent, and it's frequently underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed.
Yeah. And one thing that we see commonly, too, is that is the misconception that it's just kind of a mild disorder.
Right.
If you look at the prevalence of OCD right now in the country, the people who are suffering it, there have been studies that suggest that nearly half of those folks with OCD right now are suffering what we would call a very severe version of it, a version where they're having great difficulty working, managing their lives. In fact, the World Health Organization has classified it as the 10th leading cause of disability across all medical disorders.
One of the things that you see how the media portrays obsessive-compulsive disorder, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that, because a lot of times it seems to me they make light of it. It's just that you're quirky or whatever, and actually it's a lot more serious than that. I've had family members who've actually suffered greatly from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's been twofold. On one hand, there are times where it makes light of it, where the portrayals of the individual with OCD, they're seen as quirky. It's a little – they try to portray it as humorous, which I think does a great disservice to those folks who are suffering it. On the other hand, I think it's elevated the visibility of this disorder, where people are now talking about it. People are now starting to ask questions, start wondering, well, maybe that's a little bit similar to something that I have. And so they might start doing some research and getting help. It was interesting. When I started practice, there was a study that came out in the early 90s that suggested for the average adult with OCD that they were waiting 17 years from the onset of symptoms before they would even seek treatment. And that's a long time to give an illness a head start.
That is, 17 years. Do we know what causes OCD? Any ideas at all?
Well, one thing is it's a strong biologically based condition. Mm-hmm. We know there are family and twin studies.
So genetics play a big role in
this? Huge role in it. You know, if you have a first-degree relative, your chances for having OCD are much, much higher than in the population at large. We know more and more about the areas of the brain that are affected. We can actually see them light up on some of the brain scans for the individual suffering OCD. Good news is, as someone gets better, we can actually see these structures and functions in the brain improve. So there is a lot more hope now because we can see the biological changes that are happening as people get treatment for the disorder and start to reclaim their lives.
What kind of problems can this cause? I mean, just how debilitating can this become?
You know, so there's the, I mean, in the extreme cases, we see people that it really does impact their entire life and they, you know, might need to quit their job or, you know, again, in the extreme cases, not be able to leave their house. But even milder cases, even if people are able to continue to function and go to school and take care of their family, the compulsions can make regular tasks be just terribly timely. And, you know, the repetition of tasks can make normal activities take 10 times as long as they should.
What are some of the common misperceptions about OCD, though? I mean, we're talking about media, the way the media portrays it is making light of it sometimes. But what are some of the other things that people or other myths that are about OCD?
I think one of the myths is that it doesn't grow, that if a person has an OCD symptom, that it will just kind of stay in that low level. But unfortunately, that's not the case, that all too often it's a progressive illness, that what starts out with a few compulsions starts to multiply. What might start out with one fearful thought might start to encompass another theme. And so this person, the amount of time, the amount of distress that they spend battling the illness starts to multiply. You know, as Jennifer's saying, the toll on the individual. I have many individuals over the years who will say, I can't wait to get my head on the pillow at night because it feels like I've run a marathon during the day on top of my other responsibilities.
So what's the earliest age that OCD can start to occur?
I work with children and adolescents and along with working with adults, and I've worked with kids as young as 2 and 3 that have had clinically diagnosed OCD.
Mm-hmm. What about can it start in your adult years?
Yeah, I've worked with patients on the residential unit that it starts, you know, sometimes in their 30s, 40s, 50s. It doesn't have an exact starting point usually.
So it sounds to me like this runs the gamut. There's no one particular group that's affected more by OCD, and I take it that it affects women and men equally?
It does. It's, yeah. It's equal between men and women. When it shows up, most of the time it is showing up by the age of 19. But as Nicola was saying, there are many times we will see it showing up later in life.
And what we know, so everyone that has the genetic predisposition for OCD does not develop OCD. Mm-hmm. So we don't know for sure, but it appears that life stressors can be a factor that kind of turns on the OCD.
They can be triggers?
Yes. So it can be anything from uncontrollable stress, you know, stress triggers such as puberty, pregnancy, hormonal changes, to sometimes illnesses. Strep infection is sometimes known to be a trigger of OCD.
Just because somebody's fanatically clean, though, does that necessarily mean you might say they're a clean freak or what? Does that necessarily mean they're OCD?
Absolutely not.
Because I've heard some people say, I'm OCD. Mm-hmm. I always hear people describe themselves that way, but they aren't really.
Right. If you go back to how we diagnose the condition, those thoughts that people get, the fancy term we use is egodystonic, which means it doesn't match what the person wants. Mm-hmm. Now, the person doesn't want to get contaminated. They don't want to have the distress. That's very different from the person who says, you know, I really love it when my house is clean. That feels good to me. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of time doing it. I really focus on that. That person is not being terrorized by their thoughts. They're not living in abject fear of, you know, if I don't clean my house, my family will die or I'll get taken away, which, you know, that's when we look at really kind of separating between people who have strong preferences to do things versus people who have compulsions where they're doing them really just out of such a strong level of fear.
So, Nicole, OCD is not all about cleanliness then?
Correct. Yeah, there's lots of variations of OCD. It can range anywhere from intrusive thoughts about harming others, intrusive thoughts about harming self. It can target sexual obsessions, so obsessions that you might act sexually in a way that you wouldn't want to act.
So in fact, if someone, and we've all heard this before, if someone is told that they don't have OCD because they are not tidy and they don't care about germs, that would be absolutely incorrect. Mm-hmm. You can have OCD and
it takes a lot of different forms.
Correct.
It does, yeah.
So how treatable is this? Because I think one of the other myths is you oftentimes hear people say that there's no way to treat obsessive compulsive disorder.
No. thank goodness we now have treatments that really work to help these folks gain their freedom to get their lives back, typically using a combination of medications and psychotherapy, particularly cognitive behavioral therapy, with the focus on exposure and response prevention. As people face their fears, their brains change, their fears start to shrink, and they start to be able to get their lives back together. It's difficult because you're teaching people, instead of trying to run from the fear, actually gradually approach it in small steps. Same thing we do when we teach our kids to drive. We keep them behind the wheel. We keep them facing the fears until they learn that, oh, this driving isn't as dangerous or as intolerable as I thought it was. And that really becomes a key that helps people get their lives back and succeed.
Nicole, your thoughts?
Yes, it is a very treatable condition. A lot of work that we do, that I do with patients, is called exposure and response prevention. And typically that means starting with items that are pretty low to stress. So it might be, you know, writing down a scary thought that they have, or just like a scary word. And then we kind of gradually, once that becomes less distressing, we go up to, you know, higher level distress items. And the idea is kind of working small, but giving them enough intensive work so that their brain does change.
What about medications? What role do drugs play in treating OCD?
Yeah, they can play a very important role. Now, many times people, when OCD, if we're catching it early, or if they have still a mild or moderate level of it, that we will try treatment without the medications first. But medications oftentimes are needed to help the person, in a sense, quiet the internal storm enough so that they can do the learning that helps them make the changes. We know that for many folks, combining the two becomes one of the most rapid ways to achieve success.
What are some of the common medications that are used for treating OCD?
The most common ones are the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, things such as Zoloft, Prozac, Luvox, things in that class.
Jennifer, what about working with the families in terms of helping the families cope with this? Because if you have somebody who has a severe case of OCD, it can be debilitating, as you've all noted. So that has to be tough on family members as well to see their loved ones struggling with something like this.
Sure, absolutely. And I think the individual with OCD, you know, it's very intuitive to kind of run from their distress by engaging in compulsions. And I think it's very intuitive that family members do the same thing, especially parents of children with OCD. And it's very much kind of their intuitive parenting is to try to help your child avoid the distress that they're experiencing. But we know that that fuels the OCD. So the parents are involved in the exposure therapy of gradually pulling back on the things that they have been doing to make their child immediately comfortable, knowing in the long run that's going to take the power away from the OCD.
So would you advise parents who mm-hmm. have a child or a loved one, if you have mm-hmm. a family member who's going through this, mm-hmm. what would you tell them? What should they do?
First thing would be to become as educated about OCD as possible. There are great books about OCD written for all ages of individuals with OCD. There's great parenting books about OCD, and to really become educated about it, because if you have a child with OCD, you can't do your normal parenting intuition. Those things typically make things worse.
And Nicole, I guess it's not just a matter of telling somebody if they have OCD, stop, don't do this, right?
Correct. Yeah, you want to first. I usually educate folks about what OCD is and help them understand their obsessions and compulsions, and then collaborate and brainstorm with them so that they're on board to start to change things, starting out small at first.
Is that something that sometimes parents might have a hard time understanding, Charles, that you just can't tell the person with OCD, that's nonsense, quit doing that? I know one of my family members, that was the approach because nobody quite understood it. We all said, what's going on? Why don't you just stop doing this? And they couldn't.
Right, because one thing that people fail to understand is they fail to really understand how much fear the person has. For that person with OCD, when they're facing something they're afraid of, it would be as if we let a tiger in the room right now. We would be terrified, rightly so. It would feel like our life is in danger. That's what the experience of these individuals is. They have the feeling right at that moment that it feels to them as if their life is in danger. It's that level of fear. Even though for many of these folks, part of their mind knows it doesn't make sense, which is why this is also such a shame-producing experience for so many individuals and why they're so hesitant to tell people about it. They have that huge fear reaction, and yet they're embarrassed and ashamed that they have it. And so just telling a person to stop when they haven't been able to, well, one, it's not only not effective, but it also just increases the shame experience that they have and makes them even more hesitant to seek the help that can really turn things around for them.
It's treatable, but does it ever go away?
Well, to make it go away, you have to understand how the human mind works. All of our human minds have what I call yucky thoughts that come into our heads. Now, to get rid of yucky thoughts, we have to lose our humanness. But what we're looking to do is not to get rid of the yucky thoughts, but to understand them for what they are, that they're not dangerous, they're not intolerable. We don't have to get rid of them, but we have to learn, in a sense, to become less reactive, less sensitive to them.
Nicole, is this something that waxes and wanes, though, over the years? Can you go through stretches where you're really suffering from it, and then it goes away for a while, then it comes back?
Sure. You know, we see patients who might have gone through treatment, and they've gotten better, and then they stop seeking treatment, things are going well, and then all of a sudden it creeps back up. So it can wax and wane.
But so your advice to them would be don't stop your therapy or whatever it is you're doing. Keep that up.
Yeah, exactly. And changing, really, we know that a person's going to do quite well as we see them building their ability to accept uncertainty in life. Now, that's one of the sneaky doors that OCD tries to re-enter through, is that it tries to get the person living a life where they say, okay, if I can just do well in life just by being certain about everything, that actually sets them up for OCD kind of sneaking back in that side door.
And what kind of research is going on about OCD?
Lots of it. Actually, we're in the midst of a study up at the Lehner Center where we're looking at a new treatment for OCD, transcranial magnetic stimulation. It's been showing great promise and great help for folks with depression. We're now running a study where we're looking at using these magnetic impulses on the brain, seeing if we can interrupt the circuitry that is part and parcel of the OCD experience.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining me. Greatly appreciated. The Clinical Director of Outpatient Services and Staff Psychologist at Lehner Center of Hope and OCD-CBT Psychotherapist Professor at the University of Cincinnati's Department of Psychiatry, Dr. Charles Brady, Lehner Center of Hope Staff Psychologist Dr. Nicole Bossi, and Social Worker at the Lehner Center of Hope, Jennifer Wells.